Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. VH1 delivers a hip-hop family Christmas to its viewers Monday night. Greg Carter, the co-writer, director, and executive producer of this original movie, joins me next. That teenage spy, Alex Rider, is back today for Season 2 on IMDb TV. Go live to England for an exclusive meet with Alex Rider author and executive producer Anthony Horowitz after the bottom of the hour. Also ahead, Dr. Oz TV No More in Major Cities, How Any Live Did Last Night at NBC, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in on this December 3rd, 2021, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. And if you subscribe now, you will get it for only $5.95 a month for your first 3 months. You do it if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. And on this December 3rd, welcome once again to the program all about TV's current and future. 46 degrees at the top of the hour tonight. Happy with us for our third of three programs this week. Like we did with our first two on Monday and Wednesday, we got some wonderful guests in store for you. So stay tuned and be part of the program. It's so simple. Just pick up the phone, raise your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is in business for you. It's SimonApple04. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can connect to others right now by using Facebook Timeline. Get them in on the conversation. All you got to do is click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions, I'll be live with you. Greg Carter from Houston, Texas, from Hip Hop Family Christmas on VH1, coming your way Monday night. He'll join us after these news notes. The era of Dr. Oz, the Emmy-winning daytime syndicated series, may be close to closing. Fox-owned stations in New York City and Philadelphia pulled the weekday hour from their lineup this week after Dr. Oz announced plans to run for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania next year. In Philadelphia, the series' food-based spinoff hour, The Good Dish, with Daphne Oz, assumed the time slot. Here in New York, WNYW, the Channel 5 in New York, replaced Dr. Oz with the other popular syndicated talk show, The Real. At this hour, Sony Pictures Television has not made a call to end production of Dr. Oz, which started in 2009 and is currently under contract to continue nationally into the spring of 2023. Well, how did Annie Live, the latest NBC Live musical special, do? With 5.1 million people watching, solid against Thursday Night Football and NBC's Alec Baldwin interview special. However, Annie Live was the least viewed of NBC's live Broadway musical specials over the last 8 years, starting in 2013 with The Sound of Music, which is still their all-time viewing high. Now, quickies, Disney doings for you. Secrets of Sulphur Springs begins Season 2 at Disney Channel January 14th. And on the flip side, no more Turner and Hooch episodes from Disney Plus, one season out this year. Three-part Tiger King miniseries, The Doc Antle Story, comes to Netflix 1 week from today. Will Arnett will keep his TV day job hosting and executive producing Lego Masters on Fox next year. Peacock has new animated adventure series Supernatural Academy launching January 20th. And another jailbound relationship series is coming to WeTV, Love During Lockup. It comes on January 7th. That's news notes for today. Earlier this year, Viacom CBS announced plans to launch more than 100 made-for-TV movies that would run on MTV, VH1, Paramount Network, Paramount Plus, Comedy Central, and other places. Half of those movies would be done by new or up-and-coming talent of color, either in writing or directing roles, and they would be overseen by top talents of color. Well, that is the case Monday night with the first of three consecutive Monday night movies on VH1. This one is called Hip Hop Family Christmas. And one of the executive producers is none other than Oscar winner Jamie Foxx. Joining us live from Houston, Texas, the co-writer, director, and executive producer of this film, Greg Carter. Greg, happy holiday season to you. Welcome aboard.
How you doing? Thank you, Simon. It's such an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you with us, Greg. So tell us how you got to do this film.
Well, I wrote the script about 2 years ago. It was something that came to me from several different sources of inspiration. I've been in the entertainment business, writing, directing, and producing almost for like 20 years now. And of the many films that I have done, I always wanted to kind of touch bases on hip-hop and the different things that make it special to me. So the idea came, well, wait a second, maybe I could take something I like to do, Christmas, mix it with hip-hop, and now you have hip-hop family Christmas.
Mm-hmm. What was the idea behind doing this as a Christmas movie, given you have so much competition with Christmas movies on Hallmark Channel, VH1, MTV is now doing them, Comedy Central is doing it for the first time, Lifetime, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, you know, one of the things about the holiday season is that it is normally where, you know, whether it's politics or whether it's whatever, we tend to put our differences aside as a family, and we will come together to celebrate. And I wanted to have this situation where you have a family that's in the business. Think, I guess the best you could think is like the Jackson family almost, where you have people who are huge mega stars, and they come together for a holiday. And then all the little things that they've kind of had differences on, whether it's business or personal, love, whatever, those things, all those issues come spilling out. But what they, that's what normally happens, you know. We can all have our differences, but we can sit down for Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner and celebrate together. But in this case, I was thinking to myself, I said, well, what would happen if you put that on a reality show? And that was kind of the genesis of the screenplay, which was to try to take this find a situation where everybody comes together for an event. And then they have to work out their differences on live TV.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of holiday movies, in the course of being joyful and playful and the spirit of the season, also sometimes try to make serious points about a particular issue. And it seems like in your case, Greg, I'm wondering if you wanted to make points about the world of television, about how people in celebrity life deal with negative press, how they deal with image building, any particular points that you wanted to make in the course of this film?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of thought went in my process. My process as a director normally starts, in this particular case, with the screenplay and the story. And I wanted to try to tell a story that was fun and loving, but kind of an indictment on what happens with social media and reality and what would be our culture's infatuation, or should I say obsession, with celebrity. We are a nation of people that, you know, we want to have the attention. We always want to hold the conch shell, as you can say. And because of that, you know, it's normally a mad dash with no understanding of the repercussions to put ourselves, our lives, in front of millions of people and not really thinking about what happens when you have the specter of judgment and different things begin to come out. And then us as a society, Americans, we love it. You know, it's the newest version of the Roman Colosseum, and we are drawn to see the bruised, blood battered warriors go into it and slug away. Except it isn't always done. It's not done in the Coliseum anymore. Now it's done on Twitter fights and TikToks and all these different things. So I wanted to try to tell a story that kind of held a mirror up to our society about what we see as important, you know, and in this particular case, through the lens of this family, this musical dynasty. And how does that all work exactly? One of the things I wanted to try to do was try to figure out ways as a storyteller to make and put the audience into the situation. And so from a directorial standpoint, it meant that, you know, I wanted to do certain things as tools. So, for instance, you know, as the show proceeds and we get into more of telling a story that is about a reality show. You know, maybe take the cameras off of being on sticks and make it more handheld. So it feels like a reality show. And then even at the climax of the movie, to take it one step further, so when the family is working out their differences at this dinner table, this live broadcast, you know, I wanted to try to put the viewer in the place of the actual people who are in the show. So I wanted to shoot it with a lot of POVs to kind of make you feel like when someone's talking to another character, they're looking right down the barrel of the camera. They're having a conversation with you, the viewing audience. And you could take any of the questions that is being asked of the people sitting at that dinner table, but in a way they're talking and giving their answers directly to the viewing audience. In my own way, putting the viewing audience in the movie, in the reality show that the characters are in.
Hip Hop Family Christmas premieres on VH1 this coming Monday night, December 6th, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, as the first of three consecutive Monday night VH1 original movies involving top talent executive producers. The following Monday night is Let's Get Married. Eva Longoria is among the executive producers. And the following Monday night, it's Miracles Across 125th Street, which marks the writing and directing made-for-TV movie debut of one Nick Cannon, who also is executive producer. In this case, the executive producer as well as co-writing director is Gray Carter, and he's with us live from Houston, Texas this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're aboard, too. Simon Abba with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Greg, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next week, ABC premieres in Modern Family mockumentary style a new comedy taking place in a Philadelphia public school. It's called Abbott Elementary. I've seen the trailer for it. I think it's going to be one of the most interesting new shows to kick off 2022. You'll meet the executive producers, Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher, next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Greg, talk about the cast that you've assembled for this. I mean, you've got superstars of pop rap and hip-hop like Neo and MC Light. You've got wonderful triple threat talents like Valerie Pettiford. You got Little Mama Kirkland. How'd you bring all of these talents together?
You know, it was a cast that was built one person at a time. There was a lot of care and attention brought to making sure we had the right people. So you start off with someone like Neo, and then you're like, well, if you have Neo, you need someone to be the love interest that fits into the family. So then Carrie Hilson came along, and you know, you wanted people who also had ties to the music industry. It was really important to the producers, my co-producers, Dantari Turner and also Jamie Foxx, that there was a real sense that this was going to be grounded in reality, that the people who were going to be involved in the movie could really feel like they're this family, this Nixon family. And so that meant that you needed to have people who had experience with, you know, dealing with media and also, you know, rap beasts and those kind of things to bring that sense of realism to it. So then when you start off with, you got your love interest, your couple, you got Neo, you got Carrie Hilson, then you got to think about the big brother. Who's going to play that role? Terrence J is just always someone who I wanted to work with. He's just fabulous when it comes to really taking what you have on the page and running with it. He's so incredibly funny, so incredibly talented. And then to round out the youngest sister in the family, you know, Soraya, a little backstory here. I put Soraya in her first movie. It happened to be a Christmas movie we did a couple of years ago called Lucky Girl. And she did just a fantastic job. And I was hoping I could get a chance to work with her again. And then when her name was on the short list of people, I was like, yes. I was so excited. Because, you know, you want people who can really perform and sing. And unlike most musicals where you might have an actor lip-syncing to some actor or some performer who's meant to sing, all our people, we have musical performances in this thing, all our people, that's their real voice. They're singing, they're dancing. And that's something that you don't get very often. You know, you have these, you know you have the double threats, but you got these triple threats. And we got everybody to have fun with being these characters, which aren't quite like who they are, but yes, pretty close. And then, of course, when you talk about people like Valerie and Jody, and then also Little Mama, these are people, also Demetrius Schiff, you know, people who are in the industry but also are fans of the industry. You know, you can have – I had a wonderful conversation with Lil Mama about just how the business works and different things. And, you know, you're like, man, she's such a learned, smart person. So beautiful, too. And you begin to really understand that when you have these people – that are you gifted to work with, and that's the only thing I can say, Simon. I was just so gifted to work with them, that you really want to make sure that you get it right, that, as you say, to use a, I had to stick the landing, and so, because they're counting on that, and the movie turned out really great with everyone who worked truly hard. On our music side, Charlie Mack, everyone on my team, Jaylene, and we just had so many people that contributed and did a terrific job of helping me stick the landing. Can't say that enough. But it all started with that wonderful cast. You are right, sir.
Yeah. What kind of impact did both Jamie Foxx and his partner, Delaney Turner, who, by the way, is also one of the co-writers with you, what kind of impact, what kind of coaching, what kind of oversight did they give you and your production team in doing this movie?
Well, you know, when you write a script and, you know, you get a chance to do it, you're always like, oh, it's my baby. And when you're directing, you're really like, it's my baby. So, but you know, they were very helpful in helping me take a step back, look at different things, be able to tell a story that is not that's really has broad appeal. You know, when it came to Jamie, you know, he wanted to make sure that if one thing was right, it was the music. And people don't realize Jamie is such a talented musician, and he would often want to make sure that the musical performances are right. You know, of the movies that, of the offerings that are going to be happening, you're going to get a true treat, because it's not just a great movie as far as the story goes. It's a great movie to listen to. I mean, just so great. And Jamie was great, was really fantastic about doing that. And Detari, he was, you know, he's one of the hardest working guys behind the scenes. You know, he would pick up the phone. He'd talk with the agents representing the talent and wrangle it and bring it on home and get them in the movie. And, you know, when you look at our cast, it's pretty much star-studded all the way through. Even to the smallest parts, you have people who bring such gravitas to what they do as an actor, but also what they do as someone who brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to these characters that are, you know, offshoots of people they know are in some ways parts of themselves.
You're hearing Greg Carter. He is director, writer, co-writer, and executive producer of Hip Hop Family Christmas. It's the latest VH1 original movie, and it premieres next Monday. That's December 6th at 9:10 Eastern and Pacific Time. Greg joins us live from Houston, Texas, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom, I'm with you live from New York, third of our three episodes on this post-Thanksgiving week. Happy you're aboard. And if you have a question, comment, or mini minutes with Greg, make that call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up a week from today on Tomorrow Be Televised, you'll meet Dr. Lucille Burbank. She's written a book called The Inside Secrets of Sesame Street, which is about that series, which is now more than 50 years young and great. And we'll talk to her about the world of children's television. How did it evolve here in 2021, and where is it going in 2022, and will there be some interactivity involved too? That is Dr. Lucille Burbank. She's with us, one of our guests, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And I'm delighted to announce today that we will do another triple header a week on Christmas week. It'll be Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's December 20th, 22nd, 23rd. 24th, that's Friday, Christmas Eve day. Not going to do so you can have a fantastic full Christmas holiday weekend. So we're going to be on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week. So save those dates, December 20th, 22nd, 23rd, right here. Another triple header week for you on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Was this one of those movies, by the way, that you had to do like in July in very hot weather?
Yes, it was. But, you know, the story is actually set. So I live in Los Angeles. I'm originally from Houston. So when I write a lot of the things that I write, they're off the setting is normally Houston. And, of course, you know, despite the freeze we had back in February, you know, you don't get snow on the ground. So there's not that much of a difference in the temperament between, you know, maybe late summer when we were filming and also December when Christmas hits. Now, you know, January can get pretty cold, but yeah. So, you know, our production designer, John Goodall, did an excellent job of making sure that everywhere that the camera saw, it felt like Christmas, and you get that. But yeah, there's no snow on the ground. We shot it in Houston, and this last week has been the final week. The post-production process works as such. Even when you finish with the movie, you got to get the movie through what we call QAQC, which is quality assurance, quality control, which means, yeah, you're not done yet until you're done. But, you know, I'm feeling pretty good because we were able to get the movie through and getting everything done. But, yeah, you know, you shoot the movie in July, and unlike most cases where, you know, you're making an independent film, you know you're going to get it finished, relax a bit, get on the festival circuit, see a couple of things. You don't get that advantage when you're doing a movie that you know is going to have a broadcast date, and it's almost like the Henocles dagger just hanging over your head, like, yeah, that day is coming, it's coming, it's coming. So you just really want to have a really strong production team ahead of you. So yeah, we started prep in July, and then after we went into production, we went right in the post, and you know, you're doing all the things you need to do to get the film to be perfect. And I'm really happy with my post team, particularly Sean Henderson, my editor, who did an excellent job of keeping that whip cracked and make sure we got everything together. So, yeah, I'm extremely glad that with such a short duration, I had my team of we call them OGs around me.
By the way, I want to welcome you to our chat room, 16 Washingkar, I believe. I apologize if I mispronounced it, but thanks for being in the chat room. If you have a question or comment for Greg or Anthony Horowitz from Alex Writer coming up, put it in the room and we'll get to it ASAP. We've been seeing a lot of programs with big production numbers lately. Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, the What Will Be the Finale of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist was on Wednesday at the Roku channel. Last night we had Annie Live. I'm curious how you handled the big production numbers in this film.
Well, I think the thing you do is you want to try to make sure that first it comes from a sense of authenticity and that it fits into the scope of the story you're telling. I actually was like, you know, really wanted to make sure that, you know, we're doing a movie about a hip-hop family, that we have lots of music in it. And part of that meant that a lot of the things that we did felt like mini concerts. I mean, you wanted to do that and have it be, I mentioned earlier, I said I want that it's not just a cool movie to watch, but it's just a great movie to listen to. And so that means that I wanted to make sure that not only did the musical performances, you know, meet my expectations for just being a wonderful performance, but I wanted it to feel like you're in a concert, that you're watching these juggernauts of the hip hop industry perform, and with all that in. So you know, when you get into that, that means that you gotta have you know, background dancers and different things, these musical performances that take you to a whole nother place. And we had so many musical performances on camera, whether it was, you know, the bands that are performing background music, you see them. You know, we have the artists themselves. So it was important that we make sure that, you know, we made sure that it was something special for the viewing audience. And I think they're going to be very happy when they get a chance to watch the movie as far as, you know, putting together a great show.
So, Greg, what is next for you TV-wise for 2022? Do you have your plans lined up, or are you sort of keeping open to see what opportunities pop?
Well, you know, there's talk of maybe doing another a sequel to the movie, but this one dealing with Halloween, so I'm already kind of working on that. Also, there's a couple other – I want to do – I've been talking to some folks about doing maybe a horror film coming up. So there's a couple of things that are in the wheelhouse, and all my team, Steve Brown and Ray, Jaylene, Mac, everybody who's really helping facilitate what I'm doing next. I'm just really grateful. I've been blessed, and God has blessed me, and I've always wanted to make sure that, you know, when we do that, we keep working and just making quality stuff. So, yeah.
Hip Hop Family Christmas, starring Carrie Hilson, Neo, Terrence J, Soraya, MC Light, Redman, Valerie Pettiford, cast of super people, musical, dance, et cetera, talent. They're all in Hip Hop Family Christmas. It premieres on VH1 this coming Monday, December 6th, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time. First of three of these Viacom CBS movies that will be playing all over the place that will feature new and up-and-coming talent of color and supervised by major talent of color as well. In this case, it's Jamie Foxx, who's one of the executive producers. Then next Monday night, December 13th, it's Let's Get Married, which involves Ava Longoria as executive producer. And finally, Marriage Close to 125th Street. That's on Monday, December 20th, also at 9:10 Eastern, with writer, director, and executive producer Nick Cannon. For more details about all these projects online, here's where you go, VH1.com. That's VH1.com. Hip-Hop Family Christmas this Monday, 9:10 Eastern Beach on VH1. And don't forget, check your locals where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. Greg Carter, co-writer, director, executive producer, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on making this film. Hopefully many, many more films for TV and film in your future. And from us to all of you and your crew and cast, have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Greg Carter joining us live from Houston, Texas. More tomorrow will be televised coming away, but first some words to the fine folks at Audible.com. If you become a subscriber to Audible.com, guess what? You can get the first 3 months of subscription for only $5.95 a month, and it's not an order that lasts long. So if you want to take advantage of it, go to audibletrial.com/televised. And if not, how about getting a one-month trial to Audible.com? If you haven't heard, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, inspiration. Over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcast places. If you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, right now you can get one free audiobook, a one-month trial of Audible, plus great customer service from Audible's parent, that's Amazon.com, and great health, wealth, information can make a difference for you or someone you know while the supply lasts. And again, if you want, you can go right ahead and subscribe, and your first 3 months, $5.95 a month. Also, if you're an Amazon Prime member and you take the trial, you get two audiobooks to test out over the month, and that includes a great book from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway or Broadway and regional theater, and best and great one-woman and one-man productions. So how about making the day of the day? You make a commitment to Audible.com, whether it's a three-month trial or a subscription where your first 3 months are $5.95 a month while the offer lasts, or a one-month trial. For either way, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great holiday gift for you with somebody you love. By the way, speaking of holidays, happy fifth day of Hanukkah, sixth night coming up in about an hour and a half from now. So all of our Jewish listeners, we hope you're having a great festive Festival of Lights. When we come back, we go live outside London, and we will speak with the person who put Alex Rider on the map, first in book form and lately in television form on IMDb TV. Anthony Horowitz joins me when we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You listen to the best audio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, Tuner.com. Together, reach over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, tomorrow on BTR, it's Post Time with the Greek. Get all the latest on the College Football Conference Championships, some thoughts about who may make the college football playoff in all the major bowl games, and, of course, the latest week in the National Football League on Sunday. Post Time with the Greek, tomorrow, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of this final of our triple header week here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard. If you have questions or comments for our guests ahead, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Again, we welcome 16 Wasundar to the festivities in the chat room. So put your comment or question in the room or make the call. Either way, we will get you. It's been a very, very big last 12 months for IMDb TV. That's Amazon's ad-supported television service with all sorts of shows like Leverage Redemption, the new Judge Judy program, Judy Justice, and more. And what triggered that big run of shows was about a year ago with the premiere of Alex Rider. It's based on the best-selling worldwide books about a teenage spy and all the events he gets into. The show was so good, it got into a second season. And the second season started today on IMDb TV, which is available on smart TV sets and devices all over the place. Joining us live from outside London in Interview Exclusive, the author of the Alex Rider books and the executive producer of the series, Anthony Horowitz. Anthony, welcome in.
Thank you very much, Sam. It's lovely to be talking to you.
Same here. And congratulations on the second season starting here in the States on IMDb TV. And have you heard any feedback from your fans about the second season so far?
It's early days. I mean, it only happened today, as you say. But, yeah, so far the feedback has been absolutely fantastic. We've been getting some terrific reviews, and I'm getting some great tweets coming in. And, you know, after the success of last season, it looks like we may have done it again. I'm always nervous about being too sort of confident, too sure of myself, but it's looking very, very good at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the show has caught on like the books all over the world?
Well, why? First of all, because they got it exactly right. I mean, you know, the production values, the direction, Guy Burt, who did the adaptation, all of these people got it exactly right. We had a fantastic, fabulous cast headed by Otto Farrant, who was the perfect Alex Rider. But, you know, I think the real reason why this is doing so well is it's just what people need right now. It's adventure, it's excitement, it's escapism, it's fun. It's sort of, you know, I think what people want right at this moment after the years we've been through is to be entertained. And as far as I can see, there is nothing at the moment on television quite like it.
Mm-hmm. Over the years on this program, Anthony, we have had authors and novelists like yourself on. And when it comes to adapting their work for television, one of two things happens. Either the author says, I'm going to let other people who know how to do television do it, or I'm going to get involved in some way. Either I'll write the scripts, or I'll supervise the writing, or I'll be executive producer. Why did you decide to take the latter course and be in as an executive producer?
Well, I will say this. I mean, I have been very closely involved with this production. The CEO of 11th Hour Films, who made the show, is actually my wife, so I am very close, you know, in every single way. But one of the things that, you know, I was very busy. When we started making Alex Rider Point Blank, the first season of the show, I just didn't have the time to do it myself. I was writing a new Alex Rider novel at the time, the 13th book in the series, Nightshade, and I couldn't be writing a whole novel and doing a TV show at the same time. And I also thought to myself that actually what this show needed was a fresh pair of eyes, you know, to bring in new talent, to bring in new ideas and everything like that seemed to me to be a smart idea. So I think that if you're going to be an author and you're going to sell your work to a production company, to Sony, to IMDb, to Amazon, to whoever, you've got to have faith in the people to just get it right. And I had that complete faith and was very happy to take a step back. But as I say, at the same time, I was involved. I was looking at the scripts. I was helping here and there with a few lines and a few ideas and that. I was very much part of the team. It was a great position to be in, to be able to sort of, you know, to take the credit without doing most of the work.
It's kind of nice to have a production company in the family headed by your wife. That's something that doesn't happen every day.
I have to tell you, we've worked together for like 20 years. I mean, you know, we made a show called Foyle's War, Injustice, Collision. We've been doing TV together for a long time. As I say, this was different because I wasn't actually in the writing seat, but, you know, I had complete faith in her and in everybody else involved with this show. And as I was watching the dailies every day coming in, I could just see. But, you know, it's very rare to be sitting in the EP seat and just to be smiling and saying, yes, this is exactly what I wanted. And that's what happened with this show.
You're hearing Anthony Horowitz. He is the author of the best-selling Alex Rider books that have sold over 20 million copies around the world. And he's also the executive producer of Season 2 of Alex Rider. It started today on IMDb TV, that's Amazon's ad-supported television service. They have on smart TV sets and smart devices. And it'll be running on Amazon Prime, by the way, all around the rest of the world. And Anthony joins us live from outside London this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday, 3rd December 2021. Simon Applebaum with you from the other side of the Atlantic, Nueva York, where it's 46 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Make that phone go, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Either way, we will get you interactive with our guest. And coming up near the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. We have four prizes in play. So for those of you joining us for this Alex Rider segment, stay tuned after we wrap, because we'll give you a classic trivia question, and you could be our latest trivia winner if you know the answer and get it in to us post-haste. You mentioned earlier that Otto Ferrant, who is Alex Rider, you called him perfect. Why?
Okay. First of all, we looked at something like 600 young guys to play that part before we settled on Otto, and we knew immediately that he was right for the part. I mean, he's got the right age. You know, he's a little bit older than he is in the book, but he still looks young and plays young. So we're a little bit sort of cautious about what age he actually is in the series, but he sort of seems to sort of just represent the teen experience very well. He's a very good-looking young guy. He's great with the physical action in the show, and there is a great deal of action, particularly in season two. But also, you know what I love about Otto is there is always something happening behind his eyes. There are some actors you work with, and everything they're doing, whether they're talking, whether they're fighting, whether they're just standing in the corner, you can see all the thought process that's happening in their eyes, and that is Otto. You know, this is a character who's got a lot of baggage with him. He's got the death of his uncle to deal with. He's got the fact that his entire world has been sort of destroyed and taken away from him. He's got the fact that he's got to save the world twice now. And so there's a lot to play with in there, and he isn't just sort of, you know, a cardboard cutout action hero. He's somebody who really thinks and who you can, I think, emote with. And that's why I think he's got such a huge appeal to both younger people who come into this series, you know, who are in their early teens, to their big brothers and sisters, to their parents, to the whole family. You know, he is the sort of actor who has that extraordinary universal appeal.
So when season two begins, as it did today here in the United States, where is Alex at? Where is his supporting cast at? Where is the plot at?
Well, I mean, it takes place almost immediately after Point Blank finished. It's just a few weeks or months later. And, Alex, played by Otto, is in a bad place. The truth is that the events of what happened to him in that first season, the fact that he was nearly killed, that he was chased, you know, all over the country and everything else that happened to him and the death of his uncle and everything, has left him with something a bit like PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. He is having to seek therapy to try and get help to sort of get through what has happened to him. And when he stumbles into yet another nightmare and sees Yasin Gregorovich, the assassin from season one, in part of England in a resort on the coast, and nobody believes him, things get even worse. MI6, meanwhile, played by, you know, Stephen Delane and Vicky McClure, returning as Blunt and Mrs. Jones, our MI6 agents, don't want to have anything to do with him and turn their back on him. So Alex is alone as well. But what is great is he still has his core family. He's got the wonderful Jack Starbright. His best friend Tom is very much there, and they're trying to protect him almost from himself. But as I say, this season starts in quite a dark place, and as the adventure begins, and in the very first episode there is an enormous sort of action sequence in which Alex saves somebody's life, it's a very, very intense experience for him and I think for the viewer.
Yeah. Way back when here in the United States, we had a book series that featured teenage heroes in all different kinds of situations. You had Tom Swift Jr. Dealing with adventures in the world of science. You had Chip Hilton dealing in the world of sports. He's like Mr. Super Athlete in high school and college. You had the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, who were like the teenage super sleuths. I'm wondering if any of those book series or similar book series in England inspired you to create Alex Rider.
I do know those book series, and I admire them very much indeed, but the answer is no. The truth of the matter is that the inspiration for Alex Rider originally was very simple. It was James Bond watching the movies growing up with, you know, Sean Connery, then Roger Moore, and loving those films, and beginning to think, you know, if there was one light bulb moment in my life, it was seeing Roger Moore in one of the later James Bond movies when he was, let's be honest with you, getting a little bit sort of, you know, a little bit old for the part, and I had the thought, why can't James Bond be a teenager? And then, of course, I immediately took out James Bond because I wasn't really interested in doing, you know, in stealing ideas from that wonderful film franchise. And I began to think just about what it would be like to be a spy, to be a teenage spy, and to be a spy reluctantly. You know, James Bond is a patriot. He wants to save his country. He's very happy and comfortable in the job of being a spy. But what would you be like if you were a schoolboy and you found out that your whole life you had been trained to be something you didn't even know you were? And that's what happened to Alex Rider. From the time he was like sort of 6-7 years old, every minute of the day his uncle Ian Rider, who was a spy, was training him one day to follow in his footsteps. So Alex is sort of caught in a world that he doesn't belong to. And when in the first season the MI6 come calling and drag him into an adventure, they are destroying everything that he believes is real in his life. So that was the inspiration for it. And I think that if there's one thing that has made these books sell so many copies, and which this series does so well, it is just that. He is a reluctant hero. He doesn't really want to have these adventures. He's pulled into them despite himself.
Over the decades, British television has gotten a sensational reputation for the spy drama series. In the 1960s, programs like The Saint, The Avengers, The Baron, Man in the Suitcase, you could even say The Prisoner, Secret Agent, Danger Man, and the 70s there was Callan with one of my favorite actors ever, Edward Woodward, who later became The Equalizer. And see, I had the opportunity to meet him two times when he was doing that show in the mid-80s here in New York. And MI5, which became a big hit here in the United States on A&E Network. Did any of those shows inspire the production look, the ambiance, the feel of Alex Rider, the series?
Well, first of all, Simon, I have to tell you, you've just run through my childhood and my adolescence and my adulthood in television. I mean, all those shows, you know, The Saint and The Avengers and Callan, of course, you know, that swinging light bulb that explodes at the end of the credits, that's sort of imprinted on my heart. These are the shows that I watched and grew up with. They certainly inspired me in my writing. If you're asking whether the look of those shows led themselves to Alex Rider of a series, to be honest with you, I'm the wrong person to ask. You need to ask our originating director, Andrew Prochazka. You know, and I remember him coming in with his mood boards and his stories. And he, you know, our first director was from Austria and brought in a completely different sort of and feel to it. I would have said that no. I would have said that Alex Rider does not look back in terms of its look and its feel. I think it's looking very much to the present day. And what we're looking for is a very cool, very sophisticated, and slightly offbeat view. You know, you're not going to get red London buses and taxis and the Tower of London and that sort of imagery of Great Britain you used to get in old movies. I think we're into a much more modern. Our cast is very, very mixed, multi-ethnic, and from very diverse backgrounds. And I think that's what you get in this show, is a very modern, clean, new look to it, which doesn't actually go back to those shows. But if you're saying, does the writing have anything to thank those shows for? A lot. That was what I grew up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. And you can still see them on YouTube, and they're wonderful. The Saint, some of the early black and white episodes are now on YouTube. The Baron has been on YouTube also. I also remember a show called The Man Who Never Was that was shot in Europe for 20th Century Fox in the classic buried treasure shows of that era. And it's just amazing to see A Gideon's Way, another show. It was a more police drama, but that was another one of the ITC classic shows. A lot of the people did The Saints did that show, and it was just wonderfully done. At the end of season one, what kind of sort of review did you do with your producers, with the talent, about what worked and what didn't work, and how did you apply what the conclusion was of that sort of review to season two?
Well, you have to remember that at the end of season one, we were on a real high. We'd had a fantastic response all over the world, particularly in America and, of course, here in the UK as well, but all over Europe and further afield. And so we were really riding high. And I don't think we ever did sit down and have that conversation of what works, what didn't work. And to be honest with you, if I look at season one, I'd be hard-pressed to say what didn't work. I think what we wanted to do was simply to just follow through on that sort of – you know, it's funny, the show actually opens with Alex Rider in the south of England. surfing on the waves. And in a funny sort of way, that's what Guy Burt and me were doing with the script. We were surfing on the success of the first season and just making it more intense, more extreme, more actionful, and going further into Alex's psyche and into his friends and his family. So it was sort of more of the same, but better and stronger and faster. That was really where we were. We did not sit down, I don't think, ever, and sort of say, look, you know, this is the formula. Let's go again with that. We wanted, and, you know, of course we had the book as well. Eagle Strike is, you know, it was the fourth book in the series. And so adapting that was just, there it was in front of us. It wasn't, you know, was it? We didn't have to begin again. It was all there on the page for us. I think, as I said, you know, Alex begins in this very, very dark place, but that comes out of the last season and carries through. And I think you'll see, we're hoping that there'll be a third season, maybe even a fourth season, but that is what we're doing. We are not just doing a season that stands alone. We are looking at this as a character who is on a journey that is going to take him who knows where, over how many seasons. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that Alex deals with post-traumatic stress syndrome. How does he deal with that? How do you sort of showcase that in the course of a spy adventure?
Well, first of all, he has sort of hallucinations. You know, there's a terrific moment in the first season where he thinks he's being followed by Yasin Grigorovich, this assassin, and he gets more and more nervous and scared, and the tension mounts. And then he turns around and it's just a guy with a mobile phone, and Alex is completely nonplussed. Otto does this brilliantly in three. I mean, it is all in the acting. It's an extraordinary performance. But then he also does have Jack, his closest friend, that he can emote to, and Jack seems to be all that stands between him and the world. He has a therapist, but the therapist is herself suspicious. There's something strange about her that is, he wonders if he can even trust her. And I think that really it just comes down to this sense of, it's a little bit like, you know, it's like being caught in a web. He doesn't know who to turn to. He's got Jack, he's got Tom, but nobody else will believe him. It's a very difficult situation, and Otto's performance, I think, in this second season is extraordinary. It's all in the eyes. It's all in what he does. That sense of alienation and the sense of how do I get out of this?
Alex Rider, season 2, based on the worldwide best-selling set of novels, is now running first day today on IMDb TV. That's Amazon's ad-supported service, available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Will be running soon, if not now, on Amazon Prime Video all over the world, whether it's in Australia, Germany, Latin America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And many cases, it is today. If not, it will be in the next few days. We have live from outside London, Anthony Horowitz. He is the creator and the author of the Alex Rider books. He's the executive producer on the series through 11th Hour Films, and he continues to be with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Evan with you live from Nueva York, where it is 46 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment or any miss with Anthony, don't be shy. Get your voice going at 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, coming up shortly, classic trivia question of the week. We started the question on Monday's show. We still don't have a winner. And if we get a winner soon, that might be you, and you'll win a quartet of great prizes we'll tell you about shortly. And coming up Monday on Smart Be Televised, when we're at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, among our guests, and in fact our lead guests, the executive producers of a new ABC workplace comedy set in the Philadelphia Public School, Abbott Elementary, Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher. They're with us live as our lead guest. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How do you produce a show like this under coronavirus conditions? How did the virus, which has been very prevalent throughout Europe, and, of course, certainly in England, how have you been able to deal with it in the course of doing a series that has a lot of action sequences?
Well, you know, that is a big question. And the truth of the matter is that it was extraordinarily difficult to make this show against a background of COVID, mainly, partly because we did not want the show to look like it had been made during COVID. That is to say, you know, it has to be highly populated. You have to have lots of background actors and talent and such and keep it crowded. And as you correctly say, this show has an enormous amount of action in it. And the truth is that we spent an enormous amount of money. I mean, I don't even know what the figure was, but it was eye-watering to protect our actors. So, for example, I never got to the set. This is the first show I've ever made where I wasn't able to visit the set. I went a couple of times, that's it, to go and meet the cast and to hang hang out with them, but I wasn't allowed anywhere near them. I mean, I had to wear a mask, I had to have tests. Anybody who came, the whole set was a bubble, and the security was extraordinary. Everybody had to be tested every single day. And things like, you know, for Otto, I mean, you can't imagine how hard it must have been for this kid who was working so many hours, who was doing such an intense part, but who was also very much isolated on the set. He couldn't go in near anybody else, you know, apart from the, you know, Ronke and maybe Brennock, who were, with whom he was acting. I was there when they were having lunch in sort of different parts of the room. It wasn't even that you could have that sort of communal experience, which is so important to making a film. And I think that one of the things that, you know, that our producer, Richard Burrell, has done so brilliantly is that he has managed to make this show look like it is made in an ordinary time, but nothing was happening. You know, we did have to make certain cuts and have certain sort of things that we were unable to do simply because of it, but actually what is on the screen is a show that does not look like a COVID show. But I'm telling you, the actual production of it was fraught with difficulties. I mean, and you know, we also had to have an enormous insurance package, because if anybody had, you know, been what we say in UK, pinged, which is when you get the call on your mobile that, you know, that you've been in contact with somebody with COVID, it could have shut down the entire show, which I don't think we could have afforded. You know, I'm not sure we could have survived that happening, and it would never happen. But, you know, we got through from the first day to the last without any incident at all. Everybody was healthy and well, which is, of course, the most important thing to consider in all this. And for me, the fact that the show looks so good and does not look like, you know, two people sitting 3 meters apart, no sign of any masks or anything of that sort, is a real sort of testimony to the sort of the producers and to the actors and to the planning of it all.
How long do you see Alex Rider going? How many seasons do you and your writers and directors go?
There are 14 books. Put it that way. There are 14 books in the series. I don't think can I dream of 14 seasons? Obviously, everything depends on the fans. You know, every season is judged on its own merits. I am very, very happy with the season two. I think it is really fantastic. And the action sequences, particularly when you get to episodes 6, 7, and 8, are breathtaking. I mean, it's really extraordinary, you know, the amount of money and production value that has gone onto the screen. So I am very, very, very hopeful that we'll be back again next year. But, you know, never count your chickens, as we say, and we'll take it 1 year at a time. But there are 14 books and more on the way.
And any other projects, TV-wise, that 11th Hour is going to be working on for next year?
Well, we've just made a series for PBS in America based on one of my novels, Magpie Murders, which is I've done as a 6-part series. Again, my wife was the sort of CEO on that as well, and actually she produced it too. So we've shot that, and I'm also going to be doing a 10-part murder mystery show with her, which we've just sold and which we're now developing the script for, and we hope to shoot that next year. And Moonfly Murders, a sequel to Magpie Murders, will be the one after that. So there's plenty of things happening. And, of course, Alex Rider, that's the big thing. I'm still talking every day to Guy Burt. We are sort of thinking about the scripts for another season. We're sort of torn between which book to do and all that sort of stuff, these things need to be decided. But we are sort of gearing up to get work on that very soon, too. So plenty happening.
And plenty happening with the second season of Alex Rider, which starts today on IMDb TV, the Amazon dad-supported television service. Remember, it's available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And much, much more, by the way, coming from that service in 2022. You can be sure. Again, Alex Rider is available now on IMDb.tv, both season 2 and also season 1. And if you want more details about both the series and all the other original programs that IMDb TV is doing, here's where you go online, www.amazon.com/IMDb TV. That's www.amazon.com/IMDb TV. There is no dot, by the way, between IMDb and TV. It used to be, but no longer. Once again, Alex Rider Season 2 started today. Anthony Horowitz, the creator of the Alex Rider books, executive producer of the TV series. Thank you again for joining us, prime time from where you are outside London. Congratulations on season 2. Hopefully many, many more in store, and also many more things coming from 11th Hour Films. And from all of us, all of you, your wife and family, have a fantastic holiday year and season. And
happy holiday to you and all to your listeners and to our viewers, too. Many thanks for talking to me.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure all the way. Take care and enjoy the weekend.
Bye.
Anthony Horowitz joining us live from outside London this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We first posed the question on Monday. If you're first with the correct answer, you can win 4 prizes. 2 of them are books. The Unofficial Hocus Pocus Cookbook is based on the famous movie of the 1990s starring Bette Midler, who will, by the way, recreate her role in a new Disney Plus movie that will come out hopefully this time next year. And Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in an Extraordinary Life by Ray Richmond, the famous entertainment news reporter and columnist. We hope to have back on the show later this month. He was on our show, by the way, earlier last month, talking about this wonderful book. I have it at home now. It's marvelous. Here's the question. Oh, by the way, also, in addition to those two books, we have a Freak Brothers T-shirt. Freak Brothers, the new hit animated adult toon on Tubi, the multi-channel bundle from Fox, and from Nickelodeon's popular cartoon, The Loud House, a wonderful crayon set for you or your kids. So four prizes in play. Here is the question. Raymond Burr played Perry Mason on CBS for 9 seasons. He was the first Perry Mason CBS person to do it. Who was the second? Raymond Burr was the first actor to play Perry Mason on a CBS series. Who was the second? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post a question first thing tomorrow morning, if need be, throughout the weekend, at Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play it in. Do so. All the very best. I have to say before we go two things. One, I want to thank all of our guests this week for a fantastic triple header of programs, Monday, Wednesday, and today. I have to say, of all the post-Thanksgiving weeks we have done on Tomorrow Be Televised, over 14 years we've been on the air, this by far was the greatest. And that's thanks to our wonderful variety of guests. If you haven't heard our previous episodes, Monday and Wednesday, please go after we wrap up to www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised, and check them out and tell your friends to do it too. Make sure a wonderful weekend will be in store for you. And finally, I had the great opportunity, I mentioned this on Wednesday's show, on Wednesday night to attend Dear New York. It's a wonderful fundraiser for the John A. Reisenbach Foundation. It's a foundation that is out to create more in terms of quality of life in New York, and also has great ideas, by the way, that could be done in other cities around the country. It was a fantastic event. It was great to see a holiday event in person back here in New York. And it raised over $800,000 for the foundation. And they work with a lot of wonderful organizations, from City Meals on Wheels to Foster Pride to Jazz Foundation of America, the Jewish Board, the Actors Fund, Police Athletic League, PAL, so many great organizations that are all out to make a difference to the quality of life here in New York. And much of what they do could be duplicated wherever you are. So congratulations to JAR. Congratulations to John Steinloff, the excellent ad sales officer of Discovery, Inc., based here in the Big Apple, who was the 2021 Distinguished Citizens Award recipient. If you want to know more about the Reisenbach Foundation, how it can make a difference where you are, and also make a contribution, go to reisenbachfoundation.org. That's reisenbachfoundation.org. Celebrate its 30th anniversary this year, hopefully many, many more years in business, doing a big, big contribution to life here in the Big Apple and making things much, much better for all of us, whether you are, and where I am. Don't forget, Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, back at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific with Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher from the new ABC series Abbott Elementary, premieres next week, and then goes on its regular run the following month. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast throughout the weekend. We're available on the iRadio Podcast Network, TuneIn.com, Spreaker Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, etc. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our episodes this week? What's your thoughts about where TV's at, where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. I say again, follow our classic trivia question of the week. You can also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We always respond to what you have to say within 24 hours after. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, BTR General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, is Head of Content. Website management and maintenance provided by PodSite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator, guitarist Bakers. Tomorrow Be Televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Makes a great holiday gift for you or others you love. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free book or two and a one-month trial, or to go write the subscription and have it at $5.95 a month for your first 3 months, go to audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend ahead. We're back on Monday. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Remember, whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor. Check what your medical history is up to, and then make a great choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.